I try to sometimes have like logical themes to these podcasts, but lately it's been pretty damn random. I've been a little bit unfocused and whatnot. So we're going to continue that tradition today and just talk about some whatever stuff, some movies, some sayings, and possibly some shoplifting.
You are my density. You are my density.
I do want to apologize quickly to Palo Alto. You still suck, Palo Alto, but there is a couple of okay spots in your environs. Anyway, Max Smoke Shop. They sell like newspapers and stuff there. It's a cool little joint. I still buy sometimes like the Financial Times from there. I just like looking at it. And then also there's this great old school place, Sundance Steakhouse. Yeah, it's just classy. It's not like super expensive, but it's, you know, it's somewhat pricey, but just, you know, the waiters are on top of it. It's just got a great vibe, has kind of an LA vibe. And that's one of the great things in Palo Alto. If you're ever up here, just please go to Sundance Steakhouse. And really quickly, talking about newspapers, I've been reading newspapers for like 25, 30 years. I kind of just had this addiction where I was like, you know, having to buy them every day. And back when they're not that easy to find now, but when they really weren't easy to find, like the New York Times and, you know, Northern California, I would like freak out and have to like drive around to find one. And back in like the mid 90s, I kind of fell into this thing where I just wasn't reading them. And so I amassed like literally 3 months worth of papers in my apartment, these huge towers that were just standing there. Eventually one of them like fell over on top of me. I wasn't injured though. But yeah, I did finally like end up reading. Well, I didn't really read the newspapers, but I just like took this one like weekend. I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna flip through all the pages, just kind of look at them. And I was like covered in newsprint, and I would just go out to the trash bin with like humongous piles of newspaper, and I kind of got through everything. I read everything now. I still subscribe to Wall Street Journal and New York Times, but I get them read by the end of the night, one way or the other. And quickly on the music episode, I had forgotten to mention the dearly departed David Berman, who was in this band, The Silver Jews. Also, Stephen Malkmus sang on a couple of Silver Jews albums. But he seemed like a really cool guy, a real sensitive guy, pretty funny, obviously troubled, had like, you know, a lot of history of drug addiction and mental illness and whatnot. And he did end up committing suicide not too long ago at the age of 52, which is always pretty heartbreaking to me when someone, you know, they go through their 20s and 30s and 40s with, you know, all this trouble. And you're like, God damn it, get through there, get through the 50s and go on from there. And then, but when someone dies at that age or that kills themselves, it's always like, shit, man, you know, still we're struggling at that age. So yeah, anyway, rest in peace. And I used to love this album, Starlight Walker, from 1994. The song is called Advice to the Graduate. Stephen Malkmus sings on it, but it's like, if you got a message, leave your name and number, and we'll get back to you. Your third drink will lead you astray. Which is very true. After I have like three drinks, that's when usually shit goes, you know, out of control. A couple of quick passings. Ryan O'Neill died recently. He was with Farrah Fawcett for quite a long time. And they never were married, though. And actually, she's buried at the Pierce Brothers Memorial Cemetery in Westwood. And she actually died tragically of cancer, which kind of mimicked his, you know, character in Love Story, which I'll mention in a moment. But yeah, he was kind of a troubled guy. He had an interesting movie actually called Paper Moon from 1973, directed by Peter Bogdanovich, and it starred him and his daughter, Tatum O'Neill. They were kind of like con artists and stuff. And actually, Tatum O'Neill won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress, and she's still the youngest person to win that award. But yeah, it's kind of a curiosity. It's worth watching. It still kind of holds up. Another one from 1978, directed by Walter Hill, is called The Driver. Ryan O'Neill plays this, you know, driver, getaway driver. It's really like, you know, kind of simple, minimalist, lean, austere, whatever words you want to throw in there. I never found it too enjoyable, but it's you know, it's cool. It's kind of cool. It has a cool vibe. It's worth watching. And weirdly enough, John Voight was originally supposed to be the lead in the movie Love Story that kind of became Ryan O'Neill's kind of breakout performance. But John Voight, I think, didn't want to do it. And yeah, Ally McGraw was famously the female lead in Love Story, and it was directed by Arthur Hiller in 1970. And weirdly enough, Ryan O'Neill and Griffin O'Neill, his son, were originally supposed to be the leads for the movie The Champ, that horrendous, scarring, brutal movie where John Voight dies in the end and Ricky Schroeder is crying. But anyway, John Voight ended up getting the part, and Ricky Schroeder was the kid. So yeah, some weird kind of connections there. And a couple of songs like, you know, the love story theme by Francis Lai. That's a classic. It always tears me up, you know. I mean, I think it maybe has to do with the subject matter of the movie, but it's also just kind of a sad tune. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. And another song that can completely tear me apart is from the 1978 Michael Cimino epic Vietnam movie, The Deer Hunter. Yeah, it's called Cavatina, and it was written by Stanley Myers. But yeah, holy moly. It kind of goes, bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum. That thing will tear you apart. I watch The Deer Hunter very rarely just because it's too much. And also the super prodigious producer, writer Norman Lear died recently. God, he kept active up till the end. You know, I read he was always kind of looking for like nexts, like the next thing to do to stay busy and all that stuff, which I can totally relate to. He famously made All in the Family with Carol O'Connor and Rob Reiner. And I feel like I'm slowly becoming Archie Bunker, not in the racist way in any way, but just kind of cantankerous and kind of ornery, or I don't know, sometimes. But you know, hey, like Jessica Rabbit said, I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way. And Carol O'Connor is also buried, like almost everyone, at Westwood Pierce Brothers Memorial Cemetery. And you know, it's been a little while since we've mentioned my man, Stacy Keach. So this movie, 1976, The Killer Inside Me, directed by Burke Kennedy, based on a Jim Thompson novel, the kind of film noir novel writer. Yeah, it's about a sheriff who's like homicidal and like maybe schizophrenic. It's weird, man. It's like it's got kind of a grimy look. It's pretty unsettling. Not a great movie, but worth watching just to see Stacy Keach as a complete psycho. They made a version of this in 2010, actually, too, Killer Inside Me with Casey Affleck. It was directed by Michael Winterbottom. I always like saying his name. It's like a Lord of the Rings thing or something. Michael Winterbottom. Yeah, Casey Affleck, he's a kind of a dud. I think he's a dud in everything. Robert Redford and Casey Affleck were actually in this 2018 movie called The Old Man and the Gun, directed by David Lowery. It was pretty glacially paced. I mean, Robert Redford was fun to watch, but yeah, Casey Affleck was just so low energy. I remember my mom, me and her saw this in the theater, and afterwards she said, you know, he seemed half in the bag, which basically means kind of to be like, you know, kind of drunk, halfway drunk. Which is a great old expression that nobody uses anymore, but it's like, you know, buying alcohol in like little probably paper bags and just, you know, drinking out of it. And you're like halfway through it, maybe. That's maybe the derivation of it. And I am often half in the bag or completely bagged. There are some other like great weird old sayings I like is like to gin up something. You're going to gin it up, kind of rile it up, which I guess comes from the word engine. You know, to kind of start something up, which makes sense now that I think about it, but I never knew. I had to look it up. I was like, what does gin it up mean? Another one that's kind of funny, taking a long walk on a short pier. Go take a long walk on a short pier. I always, up till like 6 months ago, I thought it was take a long walk and a short beer. And I never understood it. And then finally, like after years and years and years, I'm like, what the hell does this mean? And then I realized I was saying the wrong thing. Another one I often use, just to sound pretentious, is there's no need to gild the lily, which is just to kind of overly embellish something that's already lovely. You know, it's like, all right, we get it. We don't have to overdo it. I guess it's from Shakespeare's King John. The quote is, to gild refined gold, to paint the lily, To throw a perfume on the violet is wasteful and ridiculous excess. I use it when I'm trying to establish my literary bona fides, bona fides. I guess you can say it either way. And one, another one is all hat and no cattle. This guy's all hat and no cattle. He's all talk and no action. He's a big phony. You hear it once in a while in Westerns. I actually used it a couple of days ago at work at the psychiatric hospital, and no one knew what I was talking about. And one saying that isn't a saying, because I think I just made it up, after Buckley and I had been stoned and we were going to go see the band Proto Martyr, we were like, this concert wasn't for a while, and we were pretty at the height of our bakedness. And so he was like, hey, let's go to the liquor store. Let's go walk down there. And I was like, whoa, man. No. We've got to bake it down. Like, we were so high. We were so baked that we have to, like, push it down. Bake it down. Which sounded, like, logical at the time. And we still use it, me and Buckley, you know, just like, hey, bake it down, man. So it kind of makes sense. And if you guys want to use it, any of you, my mom, please try to get that in there. See if we can make that saying happen. And lately, I've been getting obsessed again with kind of VHS movies. I've been buying like a lot of 80s and 90s thrillers, noir, fucked up things that are available only on VHS. And when I was younger, I had like a VHS camcorder and a VHS player in my TV. So I would set up the camcorder to record me, and then I would put a VHS tape in the VCR. I'd play the scene, and then while the camera is recording me, I would watch the scene, you know, and kind of mouth it, you know, and act it out. I remember I did a scene from the ultra corny Cobra, 1986, directed by George Pan Cosmatos with Sylvester Stallone and Bridget Nielsen. It's likable. It's one of these Golden Globus canon movies, but it's totally goofy. He looks ridiculous. Yeah, he's like wearing these jeans that are like so tight they're cutting off the circulation to his nuts, and he like walks really weird, has sunglasses and stubble and like wearing boots, and always has like a matchstick in his mouth. And at the beginning, there's like a supermarket killer in there, and then Stallone kind of, you know, infiltrates his way in, and then Stallone like grabs the, you know, overhead announcer thing in the grocery store, and he's like, hey, dirtbag, you're a lousy shot. I don't like lousy shots. You're a disease, and I'm the cure. I also did, I don't even know why I did this one. It was like the stupidest scene ever, but a great movie from 1986, The Fly by David Cronenberg, with Jeff Goldblum and John Getz, Gina Davis. Oh, it's fantastic. David Cronenberg has a shit ton of great movies. We'll get into him at some point. But I just remember the scene I did, I acted like I was, you know, messing with a computer, and I just went, Brundle, Seth, which is what Jeff Goldblum's name was, and he was just like, you know, entering his name into the computer. That was not a great scene to do. But yeah, my best scene by far, and these VHS tapes somewhere exist of me doing this crap. I have a huge box at my mom's of VHS tapes. At some point before I die in 5 years, I'm going to look at these goddamn tapes and find these. But anyway, it was from Brian De Palma's Scarface from 1983. And funny enough, there was a little period where I was like shoplifting just to be kind of a stupid ass. And so at Tower Video in Concord, California, I think the statute of limitations are over now. This was probably early to mid 90s. But anyway, I stole a double VHS of Scarface because it was so long. It was on two VHS tapes. And that's not easy to steal. I stuck it actually down my pants. I did kind of like a vacuum thing with my stomach. I was pretty thin, so I could, like, you know, concave my stomach and, like, fit a lot of stuff in there. And I got away with it. And if you ever want to look at an amazing, the vacuum pose of, like, the legendary bodybuilders, Frank Zane he was able to do this. That's his signature move. Take a look. Look him up, Frank Zane vacuum pose. But anyway, the Scarface scene that I just, this one I nailed. It's like when he's in the car, and this creep in the passenger side is like, has a bomb like set up on some girl driving in the front in another car. And so then Al Pacino realizes there's like, you know, it's a woman and a couple kids. And so he doesn't want to like blow them up. He's like, you know, weirdly enough, I mean, he's a total sleaze, but I guess he has some kind of morality. But anyway, he's like yelling at the guy, and, you know, he's like, you think I killed two kids and a woman? Fuck that shit. I don't need that shit in my life. And then he just like shoots the guy. He's like, "Are you die, motherfucker?" So speaking of a misspent youth, I've had a few incidents. One, I got fired from a drugstore that I used to work at for stealing. I was like, I don't know, I stole a bunch of cassettes and I think a BB gun and some shampoo. At some point, it was just like, I was getting so stupid. I was just like, I was stealing things I didn't even need. I stole like a couple mini TVs too, these little like Watchman type TVs. And I remember like in high school, I gave one to a couple girls in the hopes that, you know, they would like me or something, and it, to no avail. But anyway, yeah, at this kind of drugstore, they also had like a garden area, and I was the garden guy, and that was an enjoyable job. I used to like water all the plants, and I was also the carryout guy, and I never forget this really old lady that used to work at the check stand, and you know, whenever I'd hear her voice, she'd be like, "Carry out 3 redwood compost." Just a lovely old lady. But yeah, it was a physical job, and it was kind of fun. And then on Christmas, we would work at the Christmas tree lot at this drugstore. And yeah, me and my buddy Randy, high school friend who I still talk to, you know, we would bust our ass, you know, getting the trees together and getting them all ready. And I just remember whenever I would tie one on a car, just as they're driving off, I'd be like, "Fuck, I hope that thing doesn't fall off." Because, you know, I've never been technically the greatest. And yeah, I don't think any fell off that I remember, or maybe they fell off much later in the drive. But yeah, Randy was like a pro tobacco chewer. And at the time, we used to love this rap group, Eric B. and Rakim. Yeah, Rakim is just the best. His best voice, best lyrics. And the song Microphone Fiend from the 1988 album Follow the Leader has this lyric that Randy was always convinced. He's like, that means Rakim chews, man. Rakim chews tobacco. But the lyric is like, "I get a craving like a fiend for nicotine, but I don't need a cigarette, know what I mean?" So I don't think he meant he chewed, but it was a funny detail. And it's funny, Randy, you know, we were both the same age, he looked like my dad. I looked like a larva or something. I mean, I looked like I was 10, and he had a beard. He has a better beard than I can grow today. Another great Eric B. and Rakim song actually is Follow the Leader from the album. And, oh, man, if you've never heard Eric B. and Rakim, just check some out. That Lyrics of Fury is awesome. But anyway, Follow the Leader is kind of like a furified freestyle. Lyrics of Fury. My third eye make me shine like jewelry. You're just a renter rapper. Your rhyme's a minute made. I'll be here when it fades to watch you flip like a renegade. The best. He's the greatest. A couple quick Christmas movies, then we'll wrap this up. One recent, like, Christmassy movie on Amazon that's kind of fun. It's called It's a Wonderful Knife, 2023. Yeah, it's kind of a takeoff of It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart. And yeah, it's pretty well done. It's directed by Tyler McIntyre, has Joel McHale, and Justin Long is hilarious in it. He has these like weird kind of like, you know, fake teeth, and he's like the town kind of mayor, or he wants to like control the town, and he's just an evil, devious fuck. But he's got this great voice, and he's such an ass. But it's pretty well done. I mean, it's it kind of loses a little bit of steam maybe in the last three quarters, but it's a good cast. It's well done. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And then of course the classic 1988 Die Hard, directed by John McTiernan, with you know, Bruce Willis and Bonnie Bedelia. It's just one of the greatest movies ever. I mean, I think it spans all age groups. Everyone could love this movie. I mean, it's just so well done. It's written by Stephen E. D'Souza, and yeah, it's totally a great movie. It's also got Alan Rickman as one of the villains. And Alan Rickman was also great in this kind of goofy 1989 movie, The January Man. It's like a cop thriller thing. They're like trying to find a serial killer, and they got to bring in this kind of very eccentric, you know, kind of detective helper guy played by Kevin Klein. It's also got Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, or however the hell you'd say her name. Harvey Keitel is in it. Rod Steiger. Danny Aiello. Danny Aiello has a great part. He's just like, he's always yelling. I mean, him and Rod Steiger in the movie are just chewing up the scenery. Rod Steiger is so over the top, but Danny Aiello, he's just like, "Get the fuck out of here." You know, he says it like 8 million times, but he's so great. But yeah, I don't know. I watched it not too long ago, and it's great. Alan Rickman is so funny in it. He's kind of like his weird, like little partner guy. And then Robert Davi has a great role in Die Hard. He's one of like the two special agents from the FBI or whatever. They're both the same name. They're both, you know, Agent Johnson or something like that. And one guy is African-American, and Robert Davi is white. And Robert Davi was also in this kind of weird ass movie from 1991, The Taking of Beverly Hills, directed by Sidney J. Fury. It's with Matt Feuer and Ken Wahl. I watched it not too long ago. It's kind of like a, you know, Die Hard wannabe thing. Not as big of a budget, but it's got a great kind of energy to it. Ken Wahl is likable as hell in it. Matt Feuer is great. Legendarily was Max Headroom on TV. I don't know if it's, I think it's just on, you know, DVD and VHS. I don't think it's streaming, but I would totally track that down if I was you. I mean, I enjoyed the hell out of it. Ken Wahl is kind of this kind of washed up football player who has to, like, you know, these guys are taking, basically shutting down Beverly Hills and stealing all this crap. And, you know, his football pass kind of comes into play later on when he's like throwing some stuff. And I don't know, I enjoyed the hell out of it. And then Alexander Godunov, the ballet dancer turned actor, who kind of had a falling out with Mikhail Baryshnikov. He is one of the villains in Die Hard, has a great role. He's just like, you know, kind of ominous looking. I guess was legendarily a massive alcoholic, poor guy. And he died in 1995 in his West Hollywood condo, kind of like due to hepatitis due to alcoholism. And weirdly enough, just a stone's throw from where he died is where Sal Mineo was stabbed to death. The actor Sal Mineo, who famously played Plato in Rebel Without a Cause with James Dean, a 1955 Nicholas Ray movie. And he was, I think he had been working on a play in West Hollywood, and he was coming back to his little apartment and got stabbed. Yeah, I love this line from Rebel Without a Cause, James Dean. He's like talking to his parents. Jim Backus, Mr. Magoo, is his dad. And he's just like, "You say one thing, he says another, and everybody changes back again. How can a guy grow up in a circus like that?" It's a it's a fun movie. And actually, just not too far from there is the Griffith Park Observatory, where they shot quite a few scenes from Rebel Without a Cause in the observatory, and then the famous knife fight scene was shot there. And it's, you know, it's pretty cool to look around, watch the movie, and then go check it out. There's like a bust of James Dean up there. So a few quick quotes from Die Hard just to wrap this up. When they're trying to like break into the safes and stuff, Hans Gruber, Alan Rickman, he says to his Theo, one of the guys working with them, he's like, "It's Christmas, Theo. It's the time of miracles." And then at one point, like, you know, Hans Gruber thinks he has the upper hand on Bruce Willis. And he's like, "This time John Wayne does not walk off into the sunset with Grace Kelly." And Bruce Willis is like, "That was Gary Cooper, asshole." But my favorite line is Agents Johnson and Johnson. Again, Robert Davi and the other actor, they're like in a helicopter and they're like going to try and shoot some people, you know, shoot someone down or something. They're kind of, you know, going around this building, this Nakatomi Plaza, which they shot in Century City. But anyway, he kind of turns over to the younger guy, the younger Johnson, and Robert Davi's like, "Just like fucking Saigon, ain't it slick?" And then the young guy goes, "I was in junior high, dickhead."